Hey, Craig.
Hello, Craig. Thank you for the burp, Tony.
I tried to time it perfectly, but I don't think it's going to fit perfect.
It might have cost the last, like, half, 2 seconds of it.
I might keep the, like, the beep that joins in when Craig joins up. I might keep that in because that overlaps with the burp and it sounds great.
Okay.
All right. Episode 66. What a great way to start off our first postseason episode, Ryan.
Yeah, here we are in the playoffs. As we said last week, the season always goes by so fast, but we've got some awesome games like over this weekend. This is gonna be some shootouts.
What's the game you're looking forward to most?
Honestly, Jacksonville Chargers, obviously.
I knew it. We'll talk about that later, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I'm looking forward really to the Minnesota and New York Giants game.
That's the one.
I actually am taking the Giants to win that game.
I'm taking the Giants everywhere. I'm with you.
Yeah, they played each other 2-3 weeks ago and Giants kept up. Daniel Jones threw for over 300 yards.
Yeah. Jones was the guy that helped us cash that week DFS for Cheapskate show.
I'm thinking that's going to be one of the best games.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I'm looking forward to most, Minnesota and the Giants. Like,
yeah, because Buffalo, Miami, Allen's, they're going to go up by 24 at the half, and then Allen will be pulled in the third or fourth quarter.
That's my worry, too.
Yeah, which is why I'm like not really on him a lot this week in DFS.
I am, but it's because Miami's defense is just so shit poor. I will say, it's so funny because the last game where Minnesota and the Giants played each other, the final was 27-24, so the over hit. But it was 13-10 going into the fourth quarter.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah,
so it started pretty defensive.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Let's do episode 66. Let's hop in, and we'll do some more playoff stuff in a little bit here. But what do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first? Because it sounds like you got a pretty big story, so I can go first if you like.
Yeah, go first, because I go first a lot. So
all right, so I'll bat lead off today. And you know what? Like, I like doing non-players. I've been enjoying doing non-players over the last couple weeks.
I've enjoyed your little nuanced versions of a number. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I have a 66 that I think you'll find interesting this week. It's a major NFL moment that happened in the year 1966. It is the merger of the AFL and the NFL.
Damn. Okay.
All right. You ready for this? This is going to be a good one. So let's do a little backstory. The NFL's main competition prior to this was the AAFC, which ran from 1946 to 1949. The problem was the AAFC, they just bought players, so there wasn't a draft. So the Cleveland Browns just whooped everyone's ass.
Do we know any of those teams? Because I feel like I don't really know that. The AAFC.
I want the AAFC. Yeah, there's a couple. So I got a few for you. Don't worry.
Okay.
So yeah, players would just join up with like, oh, well, the champs like want to sign me out of college. That's awesome. So they were just stupid loaded. So the league ended up folding after 3 years. So three teams joined the NFL, the Baltimore Colts, the San Francisco 49ers, and the Cleveland Browns. Browns. So after 1950 is when all those teams joined the NFL, and the Browns won the NFL championship in their first year, which is fucking sick.
Nice.
So from after the collapse of the AAFC from 49 to 59, the only competition the NFL had in North America were smaller, like, Canadian organizations. There were some on, like, the West Coast area that, because of travel, like, they couldn't really play each other. They were kind of isolated to their own area.
Well, was, like, the CFL around? When did the CFL start?
So the CFL would eventually become the result of a bunch of the smaller leagues all joining together.
Oh, okay.
So the biggest one was actually called the Interprovincial Rugby Football Union.
I like it.
Yeah. So sometimes they would even scrimmage against the NFL teams. And, of course, the NFL teams just beat the shit out of the Canadian Football League teams.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So the players in the NFL were super underpaid at that point because the players' union, which started in 1956, was, like, super useless. Now, Let's bring in Lamar Hunt. Lamar Hunt was the son of an oil magnate, and he wanted to start an expansion team in Dallas, but the NFL was like, nah, we're good. So as a result, he's like, oh, you don't want to start a team in Dallas? All right, well, I'm going to start a football league, and I'm going to have a team in Dallas. We are the American Football Conference. So in August, they had eight teams. The Boston Patriots, Buffalo Bills, Denver Broncos, Houston Oilers, Dallas Texans, Oakland Raiders, New York Titans, and Los Angeles Chargers.
Yep.
So some of these teams split already existing markets in big cities, and then a few settled in large markets that already didn't have a team. Now, the AFL did a few cool things. Ryan, I think you and I would have been AFL fans back in the day.
Okay.
So they recruited players from colleges that the NFL didn't scout, like all black colleges. They took guys that the NFL had passed over for whatever reason. So they had a bunch of stuff that the NFL would eventually adopt. So they had like a smaller, more narrow ball. And so there was more of an emphasis on the passing game in the AFL than the NFL.
Like it was longer and more slender?
Yes.
Okay.
So they had an emphasis on the passing game. They had 14, they were playing 14 game seasons while the NFL was still only playing 12. They were the league that stitched players' names to the back of their jerseys.
Really?
They used the 2-point conversion. And they were the first league to sell all of their games to TV networks as one package while sharing ticket sales between home and away teams.
Wow.
So the real strength of the AFL was that the owners were willing to pay the players so much more than the NFL, because the owners for the AFL teams were super rich and had enough money to take the losses that come with starting up a new business. And when they moved some teams to different markets or rebranding like they did with the New York Jets, it became even more lucrative. The owners crushed the AFL when it came time to bid on players, with the most notable example being the AFL's Jets giving Joe Namath a guaranteed $427,000 contract.
Holy crap.
$4 million today. Listen to this crazy shit. In the 1960s, the AFL and NFL drafted at the same time on the same day. And the competition between the two shaped how the teams would draft. NFL teams would draft players like, I want the best player available, but I also want to make sure of all the guys that I like, it's the one that I like most that has the most likelihood to sign with the NFL.
Okay.
So like Gale Sayers was actually drafted by the AFL, but chose to play in the NFL with the Bears. When it came to like players going elsewhere though, like the NFL did with AFL players, what they did with Canadian prospects, they draft the rights to a player should he choose to leave the AFL. Oh, well, you were drafted by whatever. Okay.
Yeah, we've come in contact with a bunch of the with the guys we've profiled. Yeah.
Right. So this is where it gets spicy. May 1966. The NFL and AFL have a gentleman's agreement in place to not tamper with each other's contracts.
Okay.
So the NFL does something a little sketchy, and the New York Giants signed an AFL kicker named Pete Gogolak. All right.
Okay.
The new AFL commissioner, who was also the head of the Raiders, a man by the name of Al Davis.
Yes.
Retaliated against the league by bidding up as many NFL players as he could.
Really?
Mike Ditka was one of the guys that ended up was going to go to the AFL because of how much money they were offering.
Wow.
So while this happens, the NFL is like, all right, we need to get our shit together. So Tex Schramm, who was running the NFL's Dallas Cowboys because the Texans had moved to Houston, started low-key contacting the AFL owners, keeping it secret from Al Davis. So all the AFL owners are like, cool, we vote to merge. And then in June 1966, the leagues announced the merger without Al Davis knowing anything.
Oh, my God.
So here were the terms. The league would expand the number of teams to 28 by 1970. They played separate games during the regular season in their respective conferences to end with an annual championship between the games beginning in 1967, which we would eventually call the Super Bowl. They abolished the position of the AFL commissioner.
Really? So,
fuck you, Al Davis. But they didn't start playing games against each other in the regular season until the AFL's contract with the Spalding Footballs ended. Because really? The Spalding Football was the one that made the smaller and longer ball that led to the AFL being a passing league. Nice. So let me bring this back full circle for you a little bit, Ryan. In order to get approval, the NFL had to testify to make sure that they weren't breaking any antitrust laws, which luckily they didn't have to worry too much about, since the guy that they argued before was New York representative Emanuel Seller, who was the one that fought for the legislation that allowed for NFL teams to collectively bargain for TV rights, which we covered a few episodes ago.
Nice.
That was approved by our man, Emanuel Seller, and here we are today with the game that we love. Ryan, that is my 1966 AFL-NFL merger.
Hell yeah.
It's a good one.
And to make this even more full circle, the next guy that I'm going to talk about was actually a coach for the New York Titans.
What? Okay, cool. Hell yeah. Let's do it. Yeah.
I can't believe when you started talking about that, I'm like, oh my God, we didn't even try to do this.
It's perfect.
All right. So as I said, the next guy he only coached for 1 year as the New York Titans coach, but he is one of six players in Chicago Bears history to have their number retired.
Oh, okay.
Can you take a guess?
Okay, so it's 66. Is it Bill George?
Nope.
Okay, who is it?
Mr. Bulldog Turner.
Bulldog Turner, okay.
All right.
Is that his Christian name, Bulldog?
No. His real name was Clyde Douglas Turner.
Okay. I like Bulldog better.
Yeah. He got Bulldog in college.
Okay.
When people were just giving out nicknames, it was nothing specific, but just him and his teammates would just give each other nicknames, and his stuck as Bulldog.
He was like a Bulldog to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's born in 1919 in Plains, Texas. Former center, linebacker, tackle in the NFL. He's another one of those guys that just played all the time. He was played offense, right? And defense. Yeah. In fact, one of his former players mentioned, like, this, you know, he goes down as one of the greatest Chicago Bears, but one of the guys said, it was like, can you imagine, like, if he only played on offense or defense, how much better he would be? Like, sure. College Football Hall of Fame, 1960. NFL Hall of Fame, 1966.
Wow.
Played at some small little college, Hardin-Simmons College, from 1937 to 39. All-American, 1939.
Hell yeah. Let's go.
Selected by the Bears in the 1940 NFL Draft, 7th overall. All-Pro 8 times. Played for 13 years from 1940 to 52, all with the Chicago Bears. Also a member of the Bears that won the NFL championships in 1940, 41, 43, and 46.
Hell yeah, that's dope.
Yeah, right? As a freshman at Hardin-Simmons, he was 172 pounds and wasn't expected to go very far in sports.
No but shit.
By his senior year, he was 235 pounds and was a starting center.
Grown man, shit. Yes.
Yep. He's one of those guys that just dominated on offense and defense. At his rookie year, he's 21 years old. He was part of that 1940 Bears team that beat the Redskins 73-0.
Yep.
1942, he had 8 interceptions and 2 touchdowns, a fumble recovery, and a pick six. On December 3rd, 1944, I don't know what was happening, but someone must have got hurt, so they put him in the backfield. And he famously ran for a 48-yard rushing touchdown.
Dope. Real Bulldog shit right there.
Right. And just like most of these guys that were playing in the 40s, he had to do a stint in the Army Air Force.
Sure.
In 1945, where he ended up playing for like one of the Air Force teams for the season. Sure. But they let him go play for the Bears for like two games because he's still like under contract or whatever.
Huh. Okay.
And he was only in there for a year because, you know, as we all know, 1945, the war ended.
Right.
And he was able to go back to the Bears and play for another like 7 years.
Okay.
He ended up playing a total of 138 regular season games, amassing 17 interceptions, and 4 interceptions in 5 championship games.
Damn, clutch as hell.
Right? George Halas has said that he's one of the smartest players he's ever coached in his 40-year career.
Makes sense. I mean, if you're going to play all those positions, you have to know right. what you're doing.
Right. Get this, too. In 1952, the last year that he was playing, he was playing, and he was also an assistant coach for the guards and centers.
Nice.
He's a player and a coach in the same
year. Love it. Love a good player coach. Right?
And after he retired, he was actually an assistant coach for the Bears. He would sit in the press box and he would talk on the telephone with George Halas and say like weaknesses that he observed in the opponent's like defense and offense. Okay. And stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. And like I said, after he was done with the Bears, 1962, the AFL, you know, was starting and he got the head coach job for the New York Titans, who eventually became the New York Jets.
Right.
And like he was from Texas, so it seems almost fitting that he would like, you know, in his off season, like buy a ranch. He bought like a 2,000 acre ranch somewhere down there and did that. And then he bought like another ranch in New Mexico. And later on in life, he had like financial struggles, obviously, because maybe a lot of property tax and stuff like that. And sure. maybe you're not doing what you need to do properly, but it was deemed in like, what year was this? 1987. Because of his financial hardship, he was deemed an NFL pension for $870 a month. Obviously, that's still not a lot if you've right. got, you know, 4,000 acres of land.
And right. To... right.
But he ended up living out the rest of his life down on those ranches. And as a lot of people did, you know, living through that era, he was a heavy smoker and his wife was too. And they both ended up with lung cancer and
sure
passed away accordingly.
Yeah.
But he was one of the 6 Chicago Bears that has their jersey number retired. No one will ever wear 66 as a Chicago Bear. It was who are the other Bears? Let's see.
Oh, there's a bunch, man. You got Sayers. I don't think is Peyton's number retired? I think so.
I thought I wrote it down.
Hold on. I think the Bears have the most retired jersey numbers in the league.
6? That doesn't seem like a lot.
I mean, out of 99?
Yeah, well, maybe I guess that's true. That's Mr. Bulldog Turner.
Hell yeah, Bulldog Turner. That's a good one. Those are the names that you see in like the program when you go to the game. It's like, look at this decade of history or this century of Bears football. You've got Bulldog Turner. And I'm like, that guy sounds cool. All right, let me never think about that ever again.
Right.
But like, what a cool story. He was a player coach. That's so
dope. Yeah, he was assistant coach for the Bears, tried his hand at head coaching, but I don't know if did the AFL dissolve that year, maybe?
AFL's last year was 65 into 66.
Okay.
So, then I guess since we've done our 66s,
I missed one of my pages.
Oh no.
I circled all the guys that would have it. Let's see. Bears retired numbers. Turner 66, Bronco Nagurski, number 3.
Yep.
George McAfee, number 5. Sid Luckman, number 42. Bill Hewitt, number 58. And Red Grange, number 77.
The Galloping Ghost.
I knew I had it somewhere.
Red Grange. All right, so let's head to commercial, and we'll come back, and we'll do our last Superflex. We'll look at our top 3 hits and our top 3 misses. And hang on, I'm getting a letter. Quick, it's saying that we have a commercial, but it's a live commercial. So it's telling me that you are in charge right now.
Yeah. So you know, I do pretty well at other sports, DFS and gambling, but Tony doesn't like to really do any other of that stuff outside of football.
It's not allowed.
Right. So I had to buy my own ad space this week on this podcast because Tony refuses to talk about anything else but football.
Money's money.
So let's talk baseball, all right?
Oh, boy.
Baseball is upon us. Coming up, we are about a month away from spring training, starts next month in February. But we're gonna do a bunch of stuff, and I'm gonna have a little baseball corner once the season starts.
If you're paying.
Yeah. And we're just gonna talk about ways to come up with DFS lineups, which I excel in. I don't really get into a lot of gambling aspects because that's still kind of new to me with the sports book and can seem a little intimidating because baseball is a law of averages and there's so many games. There's 182 games. Like, it's all about finding streaks. It's all about finding what's going on because eventually that player's always going to go back to a 275 average. If he's hitting 350 right now, he's going to revert back. Ways to find lineups in terms of determining who that special pitcher is that night that may not be your Walker Buehler or anyone, a number of guys that are have famous names.
Yeah, Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, Nolan Ryan. Identifying those guys. Identifying those super low-owned players that maybe don't play every day, but you know that they're going to come up and they're only going to be like a $3,000 salary and they're going to hit a home run that day. It's all about finding something that's unique and taking a chance, making a very unique lineup, and that's how I've won over 10 grand on baseball DFS.
I've seen the receipts.
So look forward to some interesting baseball takes. We'll make it a 3 to 5 minute corner every show coming up. But yeah.
Do you feel like you got your money's worth for this ad time?
Well, I had to pay like 5 grand, so maybe not.
But on the plus side, since, you know, you are half the podcast, you get 2,500 of that 5 grand back.
Oh, sweet. It's like a rebate.
Yeah, exactly. You just got to mail it in.
Sure.
But
yeah, mail it in. It'll take 2 to 12 weeks for you to get the back in your account.
I got to link the stamps. I got to mail it back in. You're going to have to.
No, I got the fancy stamps now. They make stamps now with their own adhesive.
Really?
Yeah.
That's progress. That's human progress. Yeah. All right, so since your ad time, your ad window is ending, I'm going to hit us with the and we're back. Ryan, what do you think we do first? Do you think that we talk about our hits or misses, or do we build our super flex?
You know what? Let's do the super flex first.
Let's build our super flex.
Then we'll kind of give a good recap of what's going on with the season now that we're into the playoffs.
Yeah. And so we need to hop into the decision about 420,000. So we'll be back shortly with a playoff super flex lineup for you.
Beep, boop, beep, boop, 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 boop. All right, let me pull this up.
Okay. Beep, boop, 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 beep, boop, 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 boop. All right, we're back. Ryan, tell them about our lineup.
So I feel like we got a pretty sexy one here.
I agree.
All right, so we got Daniel Jones. We're pairing him with Richie James. We've got Josh Allen. We're pairing him with Dawson Knox. Because as you said, Miami's horrible against the tight end.
Third most fantasy points allowed to opposing tight ends.
We're also putting in James Cook because if Buffalo goes up by a lot, James Cook's going to get a bunch of second half action, hopefully.
Yep.
We're going Travis Etienne because the Chargers are one of the worst teams against the run this year.
Yep.
We're going Justin Jefferson. And we're going CeeDee Lamb. I can't believe we got the amount of talent.
What a time to be alive.
Salary. So we are entering this one in the $5 single entry.
That's beautiful. By the time you guys hear this, the lineup will be definitely, the contest will be definitely closed. But feel free to play along in like a 25 cent or a $2 tournament.
Yeah. There's other Superflex tournaments you can get into. There was only like 30 spots left in this one. But.
And so I love being right, Ryan. And I know you love being right. We're both big fans of being right. Sure. So So we decided to do some reflection. We did a ton of work this offseason. And now I think it's time that we go back and we look at some of our takes and we talk about what we got right and what we got wrong. So we're each going to do three of our biggest hits and three of our biggest misses this year. So, Ryan, why don't you start with your three hits, and then I'll do my three hits.
Okay, we can start with the hits.
Oh, no, you know what? Yeah, let's start with the misses. Let's end it on a high note.
Sure.
Okay, so start with your misses.
All right. I'll admit, I was a big fan of the Raiders. I thought they were going to be the second coming this year. What the fuck happened to the Raiders?
Josh McDaniels, baby.
I cannot believe that. I mean, Devontae Adams still got hits. You know, he could have had more, but he was who we thought he would be. But other than that, like, it was just bad. Josh Jacobs did really good. He had one of his best years, but even still, they had a losing record. Yep. I don't understand how that happened. I mean, and even there was even like they could have even had a worse losing record because they won like two or three of those games on last second field goals and overtime.
Or Jacoby Myers backwards passes that get returned for touchdowns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Freaking crazy shit.
Yeah. That's a bad team. And I think next year, one of the things that I've learned is like, we need to put way more emphasis on coaching.
Okay.
Bad coaches can sink good teams, you know?
True.
All right, what else you got? Give me another one.
What happened to Jonathan Taylor and the Colts? Both you and I were kind of hot on Matt Ryan and the potential for this offense this year.
Oh, we'll talk about that. We're not done talking about the fucking Colts.
I just don't understand it. On paper, it looked so awesome.
Yep.
With the addition of Alec Pierce. And even Alec Pierce was like nowhere. Yep. You know, I can't wrap my head around how that team turned out this year. There's starting JD Almendinger or whatever his name is.
Yeah. God damn, that team was bad. All right, humble yourself once more.
Well, this last one, I think, like, everyone, like, was... everyone thought Seattle was going to be the worst team in the league this year. But somehow they're in the freaking playoffs. I don't understand it. Geno Smith, out of nowhere. We saw a little glimpse of it last year when Russell got hurt with his, you know, his janky finger injury.
Yeah.
And he had to come in and fill in. He threw like two touchdowns and a few hundred yards, but.
Yep.
We saw a little glitter. I did not think that would translate this year to any part of that offense.
Nope. I made a bet, a futures bet, in August that the Seahawks would be the team with the first pick in the NFL draft this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I was wrong.
Should have bet the Bears.
Had no shit, right?
Yeah.
All right. So you ready to hear my misses?
What do you got?
Oof. All right. Michael Pittman as a top 10 wide receiver in fantasy this year.
Where do you finish?
I mean, like 19, between 19 and 24, I think.
But so he was still top 20.
But I said that it was because Matt Ryan was going to come in and put up 2019 Ryan Tannehill numbers.
Right.
Yikes.
Do we know, like, are they going to, Matt Ryan's done, right?
I think so. And, I mean, the Colts might be the team the Bears trade with out of that first pick overall, so we'll see.
Okay.
All right, number two, I'm going to quote myself here, Ryan.
Oh, no.
All right, I'm not going to say the player's name real quick. I'm going to just say blank. Blank is solidly in the tight end blob and is nothing more than a spot start, cheap DFS matchup play, or a very late drafted guy if you don't care about the tight end position and totally punt it and get a cheap guy.
Oh, what is
the player I was talking about, Ryan? Evan Ingram.
Ooh, yeah. He started the year a little shady, but he's developed into a good target for Trevor Lawrence.
He crushed it down the stretch, man. He absolutely shredded motherfuckers. I also need to take the major L on Damian Pierce. I hated Damian Pierce's college tape. I thought he was going to a terrible team with terrible run blocking, and I was out on Damian Pierce, and I screwed that up. Now, Ryan, I have a bonus fuck up right here. I wanted to share with you. I took, when we were comparing guys this offseason using our 4-for-4 rankings.
Uh-huh.
I took Elijah Moore over Christian Kirk.
Oh, no.
Yeah, fucking terrible. Absolute atrocity.
Yeah, and we don't know, like, I still am unclear on what exactly. Was it just his attitude didn't jive with the coaches, or?
No clue,
I guess, you know, and it doesn't help that they went through, they played, like, three different quarterbacks this year, but.
I don't think that offense has the desire to funnel the ball to more than one guy.
Sure.
Yeah. You know. So let's talk some wins, Ryan. Let's go back and forth on this one. So give me one of your top three wins of the year.
Let's see. How about the Detroit Lions? Now I said at the beginning of this year that the Detroit Lions are going to be very good.
Yes.
Very good. And they would have a winning record. And guess what happened?
You nailed it, man. They had a winning record. We were both high on Detroit, but I don't think they're as bold as you.
They did. I don't know, man. They if they stay healthy, I don't think they're going to get rid of Goff. He's kind of jiving a little bit with that.
Yep.
And they're going to have a chance to win the NFC North this year because I don't think the Vikings can keep all the players they got going into the next year, regardless of the question. What's Kirk Cousins' contract?
Too much. He signed a huge contract. I mean, he's still there. He'll still be there, but, like, that defense is really bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Detroit Lions defense is bad, too, but they got a chance in the offseason to make it better. I think they do pretty well next year.
I think Detroit's got a better defense than Minnesota today.
The only thing I'm worried about is, wasn't one of the assistant coaches like being interviewed for a head coaching job somewhere?
I think their offensive or their defensive coordinator is looking at jobs.
Yeah. But the Detroit Lions turned out pretty good this year. It was actually like fun watching their games when normally it's just like, oh, they're playing the fucking Lions. Oh, great.
Dude, that Sunday night game is one of the best games of the season.
Yeah. And they beat the Packers. They beat the Packers to kick them out of the playoffs. It was freaking awesome.
And everybody caught on to something that we've all known for years, and that's Jamal Williams fucking rules.
Right.
All right, I got a quick one for you. I said this on July 8th. Kenneth Walker is an absolute steal at RB30, which is where he's going in July.
You did like Walker.
Love Kenny Walker. Kenny Walker was actually my favorite rookie running back this year.
Nice.
Like, when I do scouting, I always do like, all right, this guy's the best, but this guy's my favorite.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that was Kenneth Walker. And like, Ryan, we both knew Trey McBride was the best tight end coming out, but we had favorites that weren't Trey McBride, you know?
Yeah, and that transitions into my next one about, now I know this year's tight end class was pretty good, but I hit on a decent amount of these tight ends, and they're going to, like, a handful of these guys that we were talking about, they're going to be freaking really good.
Yep.
You know, maybe not potential Kelce level, but maybe they could. You know, it just depends on where they go and how their career develops. Bellinger shows real promise, especially if the Giants get really good.
Yep.
Obviously, Daniel Jones is going to be around next year.
Again, I can see Daniel Bellinger having like a Kyle Rudolph type role for the next 6 to 8 years.
Sure. Yeah.
But with like a pirate, like an eye patch.
Right. So we did some really good tight end research this year, and I feel like I did really good with a bunch of those guys.
You did. We were high on Chig Okonkwo. We loved Isaiah Likely. We liked Daniel Bellinger. You liked Greg Dulcich.
Even small-time guys like Quitoriano are coming out and showing that they can perform. They didn't get a lot of exposure in the beginning of the year, but they're good. Calcaterra was starting to come out towards the end of the season.
Jelani Woods.
Jelani Woods, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let me take my flowers here and talk about how right I was in a way that I didn't think I was going to be. All right? So one of the guys that I was highest on this year, a guy that I'm like, I want to leave every draft with this guy, was Rondale Moore.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was hurt for a lot of the year. And when he was hurt, he was filled in by Greg Dortch.
Yeah. Right?
Now, last year, I was huge on the fact that Christian Kirk had 91 catches last year as the slot receiver in Cliff Kingsbury's offense. And I was like, you can expect the same for Rondale. So I combined Rondale and Greg Dortch's numbers, and they had 93 catches combined.
Damn.
So that slot role is going to get fed in a Cliff Kingsbury offense. Now, is Cliff Kingsbury going to be coaching anywhere next year is the real question, but I am definitely taking the W on Rondale Moore.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. It was a good scheme call for that offense.
Yeah. It's good process for sure.
Right.
So Ryan, tell me about, I know you saved a good one for last, so I want to know your last big win of the year.
The Jags, baby.
Oh boy.
Tony laughed at me. I remember we ended an episode and he's like, give me a bold prediction. I'm like, the Jags make the playoffs. And he laughed at me with like utter disdain. it was like, he was like, are you fucking kidding me? Do you know anything about football? And here we are. The Jags are in the playoffs and got a pretty favorable matchup against the Chargers at home.
Ryan sent me a playoff bracket that he filled out for work, and it had Jacksonville winning the Super Bowl. Joke. I thought that was so fucking funny.
I mean, I didn't turn that one in for real, but
right.
I was like, what if I just submit this? You know, I had Jacksonville winning the Super Bowl, and I think Jacksonville was, I don't know, they're ridiculous. It's like plus 3,000 for them to win the Super Bowl outright. But
It was a good call, Ryan. It was a good call.
Showing some promise. I mean, if they can keep those guys around, obviously Lawrence is going to be there for a while. If Kirk signed that huge contract, so he's going to be there for a while. Ingram, I can't remember his contract, but this is his first year, so he should be there for at least another year. ETN, showing like, you know, for someone that tore their ACL in practice before the even season started in their rookie year. Was it Achilles?
Yeah.
Anyway, he was out his entire rookie year. No one knew what to expect and comes out and looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they had James Robinson a little bit through the year, but they needed to get rid of him so ETN could get his share of the workload. That team's going to be really good as long as they can stay healthy over the next few years.
Well, you know who's coming in next year, right? It's Calvin Ridley, baby.
Where'd you hear that?
Calvin Ridley got traded to the Jags. He's just suspended.
I thought he was only suspended for 1 year.
Yeah, but he'll be back to the start for the start of next year. So their wide receiver core, I think Zay Jones is a free agent, but their wide receiver core, if they brought back Zay, would be Zay Jones, Christian Kirk, and Calvin Ridley.
Oh my God, that's going to be bomb.
I know. I know.
I really hope the Jags stay healthy. I always love rooting for them, and that was one of my biggest bold predictions of the year.
Hey man, you nailed it, and I laughed at you, and I laughed at you.
That stuck out in my head because I was like, he thinks I'm an idiot.
Okay, so you're not an idiot, clearly. And I'm not, because I decided that I, instead of telling you what my prediction was, I'm just going to read to you what I wrote.
Okay.
All right. I'm betting on Justin Fields this year in fantasy for two reasons. One, he's demonstrated a tremendous ceiling as a runner, and I believe that anyone except Matt Nagy can build a game plan that plays to Fields' talents. In Fields' first four starts, he averaged 3.75 rushes a game. In his last five, he averaged 8.4 rushes. I'm in on Fields because fantasy quarterbacks that run over eight times a game are almost a lock for a top 10 quarterback season. The Bears' wide receiver room is terrible, so when Fields is pressured since nobody is getting open, I think his scrambling numbers go up, and that's fantasy gold. Fields was a quarterback one in four of his final five, with the only exception being a game which he left with an injury at halftime. PFF has the Bears receivers ranked as the last or the worst wide receiver room in football, and I totally get it. So I think Fields ends up running more often than quarterbacks, and goddamn does he look good doing it. The end.
Damn, Tony.
Dude, everyone that's like, oh man, Justin Fields, like that didn't know that this was coming, didn't watch the Bears.
Right. Well, so and, where did he end up? He was in the top 10 then, right?
Yeah, I think he was QB 7.
7? Okay.
With like two games that he didn't play. But like, dude, he ripped shit up. And anybody, and I want to say this because I'm fucking sick of looking at Twitter and seeing people be like, the Bears need to draft a quarterback and they need to trade Justin Fields. Like, are you fucking dumb? Are you dumb?
Yeah, they're all like, they need to trade the first pick and get two first rounders and draft a quarterback.
It's the dumbest. It makes me infuriated. I almost wish the Bears didn't have the first pick because this is going to be annoying right for the next four fucking months. But like,
well, I mean, do you think they should trade the first pick and then like get a wide receiver to try and get like top 10 pick? Like, that's what I want to see. We need to build some shit around with this guy. Like, he clearly doesn't have a lot of help outside of Cole Kmet. Like, I mean, yeah, we brought Claypool in, but what did he have, like 14 catches?
Well, like, Claypool's learning a new system, so you got to give him a little bit of time.
That's true.
And everyone's saying the Bears overpaid for Claypool, and I get that, but the Bears were 3-5 when they traded for Claypool. It wasn't like they were 0-8.
And the Bears also have the freaking money. They've got the most money in salary cap this year to do whatever the hell they want.
So here's what I think. I think that the Bears, they trade out of the first pick hopefully to Indy, and or even if they go to like Houston and they get the second pick and the 15th pick from Houston, that could be baller, because you end up getting the defensive player you want, whether it's Jalen Carter or Will Anderson, and then you use that 15th pick on the best either defensive lineman available, or you get the best like offensive lineman available. You could get Skoronski from Northwestern, or you could get that kid from Ohio State. Like, I don't think the Bears are going to be in the right spot to get Jackson Smith and Jigba, but they will definitely get another receiver this year. I think if they get a future first next year, they get Marvin Harrison Jr., and that would be fucking sick.
Did Fields play with Njigba?
No. Fields played with Njigba, I want to say for a year, but he might have been redshirted. I'm not sure. They didn't play much.
But
it's so funny because, you know, the story is that when it was Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jackson Smith and Jigba, they asked who the best wide receiver in the team was, and Wilson and Olave were both like, oh, it's Jackson Smith and Jigba. He's the best receiver in this room.
Right.
But it was pretty funny to watch old Justin Fields' Ohio State highlights and seeing him throw touchdown passes to Jamison Williams.
Yeah, and Olave. And
it's just nuts. Yeah. And your boy, Jeremy Ruckert.
Yeah, him too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's. I got him in a couple places in a dynasty, but he didn't really get a chance to do anything this year. But he still can emerge as someone. I mean, he was great at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. And I've already started watching some quarterback tape. I'm pretty much done scouting quarterback tape for the year. I'm going to move on to running backs. I'm pretty excited to scout Bijan and then the receivers. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got to start all that stuff too, but we got
time, baby.
Yep.
All right, so that's it for 66, Ryan. We're getting close to 67.
Yeah, I mean, real close.
Yeah, imminent. We're at 67. Warning.
Yeah,
not at a watch. We're at a warning. So yes,
this was a really good episode.
Enjoy to Ryan, to you, and to our listeners. I hope you enjoy 2 days, 3 days of playoff football, because there's a Monday night game. How crazy is that?
Yeah, I do like how the NFL spread it out a little bit. Because we originally thought like they're gonna do just 12, 3, and 7 Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
But now it's 2 tomorrow, 3 Sunday, and 1 Monday night.
We're doing a farce ball for the Monday game.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Sweet. Hell right? Yeah.
Well, because Evan was like, dude, if Tampa Bay makes the playoffs, we need to do a farce ball for whoever they play.
Yeah, so I'll be tuning in.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're listening to this, catch us on Twitch on Monday night. And that's it for 66. So next week, we'll have to figure out some more stuff, because technically, for what we do, since we're a pretty fantasy-focused podcast, we need to figure out how we're filling our time before the off-season starts. So we'll have some fun shit planned for you next week.
Yeah, we can build some lineups or do some more.
You know, the wild card weekend, there's always like two games that are worth talking about.
Sure.
So, and it'll just be on Saturday and Sunday next week. So we'll hammer out some good talk. We'll give you some predictions for the divisional games, because as you guys know, it's not this weekend, it's next weekend that the really fucking good games happen. The divisional round.
Right.
That's the money round. So that's it for us. It's 66. It's Tony. That's me. It's Ryan. That's Ryan. And Craig is Craig. Ryan, before we go, since you are the hot take king, Mr. Jacksonville, who wins this week? Give me one. Give me a lock. And don't go Buffalo. Don't go Buffalo or Cincinnati because that's fucking easy.
No. Everyone knows I'm going to take Jacksonville, obviously. But an interesting outcome this week, I like, is the Giants over Minnesota.
I love that, too. I took that one, too, for my article for Football Absurdity. My last take before we're done. And then we're good because we did 66. Ready for this? 49ers Seahawks under 42.5. Easy peasy.
What's the line on that? What's Frisco?
42.5, and they're up. I think Frisco's 9.5.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I meant. 9.5. Okay.
Yeah, and it's gonna be like rainy as hell. It's, you know, it's super wet.
They
out
got
there.
All those. They got all those storms going on in California. That's right.
Right. So I'm predicting a low scoring game, and I hope I am. So that's 66. Next week we'll come at you with 67 with all kinds of new fun stuff. And I look forward to seeing you. So, Ryan, until next time, I will talk to you.
Oh, yeah. Very good episode. Good night, Tony. Good night,
Craig.
Great
job. Good night, Ryan. Good night, Craig. And we'll see you guys next week. I hope you enjoy the games this weekend.
Go Jags.
Peace.
Jags are in the playoffs.